This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kuser. Many businesses were forced to close their doors during the pandemic shutdown earlier this year, but farmers markets stayed open. The open-air markets are vital sources of fresh food to many communities, with direct access to locally grown produce, baked goods, and many artisanal products. I'm Tom Kuser. You're listening to The Full Story. Today, we're taking a closer look at farmers markets in this region and how they're doing at the time of COVID-19. Joining me now via Skype is the Connecticut Commissioner of Agriculture, Brian Hurlburt. Commissioner, hello, and welcome to The Full Story.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here, and thanks for your interest.
I'm wondering, how many farmers markets are there in Connecticut? Is there a tally of those?
There is a tally. Off the top of my head, I can tell you it's over 100, but I can't tell you the exact number. But we could get that for you.
And these are markets that operate on a weekly basis or a daily basis? Mm-hmm. Do they have similar schedules?
Yep. They have regular schedules. A lot of them are in town greens or in parking lots or community centers that make it easy for folks to get out there and support them.
And are they fairly widespread? I'm wondering, do most people in the state have relatively easy access to those farmers markets, the 100 markets?
I will say that they're spread across the state. The access question depends on where you are, what source of transportation you have, and your ability to get there. But there are a lot of them, which is good because that makes it close proximity for almost everybody in the state to be able to get out there and support their local farmers.
And were most of the markets or all of the markets that you know of able to keep operating during the pandemic? I'm wondering about things like not only customers at the market sites, but supply problems, possibly harvesting problems caused by the pandemic.
We were very fortunate that agriculture and farmers markets were deemed essential right from the very beginning of the COVID-19 response. The governor and his office recognized the importance of, as you mentioned at the front of this conversation, access to fresh fruits and vegetables, the ability to support your local farms, that there's this larger sense of the community that it still allows for. So the vast majority of Connecticut farmers markets stayed open. That doesn't mean that they didn't make some changes to how they operate or have to relocate or facilitate a little bit different of an operation, but they were able to stay open. And what we've heard and seen from folks around the state is that they met an increased demand this year. That Connecticut consumers were really interested in supporting their local farmers. They were really interested in buying fresh local products. And I think that shoppers like you and me understood the value of supporting a local small business and what it means, especially when you have all these ongoing challenges that COVID has presented.
Do you think the increased demand was in part people sort of hesitant about going into a supermarket or an indoor situation to buy their fresh produce?
I think that was part of it. And I know a number of individuals, literally individuals, had reached out to the department and said, where's my local farmer's market? I'm concerned, or a local farm stand, this, especially at the beginning of the COVID response, people who are immunocompromised or in an at-risk age group, they wanted to continue to be able to shop and the added benefit of supporting a local business became a little bit more important this year. And so because our farmers markets and farm stands are a little bit smaller, they can be a little bit more nimble, and they could be a little bit more creative. And so at a lot of farm stands across the state, they were the first ones to implement, limiting the number of customers in and putting hand sanitizer, making it available for their customers and their guests. And this was really important, not only for the customer experience, but, the vast majority of our farmers markets and farm stands are operated by the farmer or one of their family members. Mm-hmm. And so it became really important that they are protecting themselves as much as they're protecting their customers. Because if a member of the team goes down, You don't have another person that you can just call up and say, hey, can you cover the shift for me tomorrow? You know, I'm not feeling well. I got to go get tested. And so they were really proactive in making sure that the protections were in place for both the customer and the farmer and employee, which was really great. And I think that gave folks a little bit added sense of security. And if you're looking for your local farmers market or farm stand to continue to support, we worked with Connecticut NOFA at the very front end of all this. And we developed the ConnecticutGrownMap.com, a website that's a listing of the farm stands, farmers markets, and farm stores that have been open, their hours, their location, their social media pages. And it's just been a really nice place for individuals to go to find out, all right, you know, where can I go support a local farmer and what are their hours? We haven't really had that sort of, you know, catalog, if you will, previously, but this was one of the silver linings that came out of COVID.
And could you just take a moment to explain what Connecticut NOFA is?
Connecticut NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farmers Association. So they are a trade organization of organic farmers. But when we talked to them about the Connecticut Grown Map, the ctgrownmap.com proposal, we said that this shouldn't just be for organic farmers. This really needs to support all of Connecticut's farmers. And that included our aquaculture farmers, the men and women who raise and sell our clams and oysters. And NOFA was great. They understood that lifting up all of agriculture and providing that sense of community and that resource for everybody was really important. And so Connecticut NOFA is the host of the site. But it is not just organic farms, and it's not just farms that are members of Connecticut NOFA, which is, you know, just a tremendous comment about how well NOFA has been as a partner in all of this.
I'm talking with Brian Hurlburt, the Connecticut Commissioner of Agriculture, about farmers markets and the effect that the pandemic might have had on the markets this year. I'm wondering, were there any supply chain problems with an increased demand during the pandemic? Clearly, when the farmers were planning for this year's farmers markets last year, they didn't have pandemic in mind, and there might be an increased demand or an effect on the supply chain simply because of restrictions on people getting together.
Well, and that's I'm glad you point out that when they were planning this year, you know, they do this well in advance of the farmers market season. That COVID wasn't something that was really on the horizon. Thankfully, there weren't many supply chain issues. And when we saw in the challenges at the grocery store with supplies, that reinforced that your local farmers are there and providing some great food options. And so I think that helped push some people to get out to their local markets. We at the department, through the Emergency Operations Center, had been made aware that a donation of hand sanitizer had been made to the state. And the EOC, as we call it, was looking for a way to distribute that. And did anybody have any ideas? And so we quickly respond to that. Well, we think, you know, depending on the size and the amount of the hand sanitizer available, that we could make it available to farmers markets and farm stands, you know, on a limited basis. They responded that they had 230-gallon tanks of hand sanitizer to be available, which was a little bit more than we were expecting. It created a different challenge. You know, we were thinking that they might be, you know, a couple cases of you know, bottles of hand sanitizer. But, you know, what COVID has shown is that when people work together on a common cause and to meet a common need, great things can be done. And a great example of that is we worked with UConn Extension in their regional offices. We made one of the tubs available at the Hartford Regional Market for people to come up, and we had a sign up for people to come up and get up to 5 gallons worth of hand sanitizer for their market, their pick-your-own operation, or their farm stand. And then UConn Extension, through their extension offices across the state, distributed it, distributed hand sanitizer to farmers and interested parties through that network. And so it's just a small example, but a nice one about how resources were made available through a generous donation of a company that we were then able to take advantage and working with our partners in the industry able to disperse.
It does seem like December is an odd time to be talking about farmers markets, as I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Are any markets, as we head into the middle of the month, are any of the markets still open?
There are some that are still open, and it is on a limited basis, and there are some other protocols that are in place. And I would just strongly suggest that people check out the ctgrownmap.com before they make plans to head out anywhere and just verify the hours of the markets and the location and any protocols that are in place before they jump in the car and head out. We don't want to waste anybody's time, and we really are thankful for their interest and support in the farms and the farmers markets, but we want to make sure that they have the information before they leave the house to head out.
Do you think the farmers markets will function differently in the future? Has the pandemic changed the way the farmers and their markets will handle the business once the pandemic is over?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think there was a lot of adaptation that happened that didn't really require a huge change in the operation. I will say that at our agritourism events, the pick your own events, apples, berries, pumpkins, the corn mazes, the choose and cut Christmas trees, that did require a little bit more modifications. And so I know one farm started an appointment arrangement. And so you could only show up at the farm to do your pick your own at a certain time. And that was their way of managing crowd sizes and ensuring that everybody could have the best possible experience. They changed some of their the mazes instead of being a maze where you'd be going back and forth and encountering other folks to be more of a walk through the cornfield. And there was a lot of anxiety about how would the consumers respond? Would people want to do it? I've been paying attention to these and asking questions pretty regularly about these experiences. And by and large, it's been really well received. I think families are looking for something to do to get out of the house that's a COVID responsible and a COVID friendly way. They're looking to support their local community members. And they want to do it in a way that they feel safe and secure in. And so, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more changes in the pick your own in the agritourism space than we necessarily saw in the farmers market space. The most important part of all of this is that people are continuing to support their farmers. But it's been kind of interesting to see that shift in the reception from the consumer.
Commissioner, you mentioned before how far in advance the farmers have to plan for their crops and how they'll handle their markets in a coming year. What in the world are they doing right now? Well, there's so many variables without a pandemic in being a successful farmer. How are they handling the next year's plans, 2021's plans, in this era?
Well, they're asking themselves a lot of questions, and that's always a good place to start. We saw about a 30% increase in demand for our direct to consumer sales. And so farmers are trying to think right now, is that demand going to continue? Will people want to come back? I think that these events have provided a positive experience for consumers and that they will come back. We're in the works of launching a Connecticut Grown campaign to continue that positive attention to Connecticut farmers and farmers markets, to encourage folks that now that they've seen and met the farmer and the farm, that they should go back and continue to support them. So that has been actually one of the big questions that the farmers are asking is, can they expect that same increase next year? And I think there will be kind of a movement of where they were a couple of years ago to where they are after COVID in a positive direction. And we have some grants and programs available to help them with that transition, to put more land into production and to help manage that risk for these new operations. And again, we're, you know, we'll be doing some marketing on behalf of the entire industry to elevate that message. But I think that that Connecticut consumers have seen a good thing and they're going to want to come back.
Commissioner, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And just again, I'll plug it, ctgrownmap.com for those of you who are looking to support your local market and farmers, farm stands.
Brian Hurlburt is Connecticut's Commissioner of Agriculture. Today, we're finding out how farmers markets are surviving during the COVID-19 pandemic and how farmers are keeping the food supply chain strong during this health emergency in our region. Joining me now via Skype is Jif Martin, the Sustainable Food System Associate Educator for UConn Extension, and she works to support new farmers in sustainable production. Ms. Martin, welcome. Thanks for joining us on The Full Story.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
First of all, maybe a definition. What does it mean to have a sustainable food system?
Well, I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. A lot of people use the word sustainable and they think it means, well, just leave it the same as you found it. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it going. And when we say sustainable food system, we're actually trying to make it better than when you found it. So if you were a farmer, that would mean improving the soils, for example. If it's work in the community, it means empowering residents in the community to have more control and decision-making. So to be a sustainable farmer, the notion is not only to have a viable farm business, but to be successful, to be able to grow that business as you choose, and to you know, usually feed the community is what most of the farmers that I'm working with are trying to do.
Could you tell me a bit more about your program to ensure or help promote sustainable production?
Sure. We actually have a few programs, but one of our programs we called Solid Ground, which is targeting new farmers who have less than 10 years of farming experience. And we offer trainings, like, for example, agriculture mechanic trainings, like how to use a chainsaw safely or how to do welding. We also offer agroecology trainings, which is like learning how to deal with pests in the field. And then we partner with folks like New Connecticut Farmer Alliance and Connecticut Northeast Farming Association and Land for Good. And with those partners, we're doing things like offering farmland mixers, which is where somebody who's looking for farmland can meet somebody who has farmland. We have peer-to-peer learning opportunities we call farmer circles, and even offering some urban agriculture trainings.
And I mentioned earlier that we were wondering about the condition of the supply chain during this health emergency. Has it remained fairly strong during the pandemic and going back into the spring and summer?
So it's been quite a year for farmers, as it has been for everybody.
Sure.
And you have to recognize there's a lot of diversity in the farming community. The smaller growers that sold directly to consumers, maybe they did it at a farmer's market or through a CSA operation, which is where people, that's community supported agriculture, where people buy a share, basically a box of veggies every week. Those folks continued to operate. However, they had to make pretty big changes to how they operated. They had to, in some cases, spend a lot more money on packaging and even staffing in order to have contactless service with their customers. They did lose their restaurant customers, of course, so they lost a lot of their wholesale accounts. But most of these businesses already are are diverse. So, you know, percentage of their sales might be direct sales at a farmer's market, and then another percentage might be through a restaurant. So what they saw was increase in demand for their products, largely from direct channels, largely because they could offer that contactless, socially distant option of a fresh local product, especially when people didn't want to go to the stores at all. Mm. And they also had to accommodate a desire for online transactions. So many of these businesses had to quickly, normally some of them are just cash-based businesses. They had to quickly, set up a new online point of sale system. At the same time, they lost accounts, through the wholesale. So they had to it was quite a big transition in this particular sector. If you were a pick your own operation, you had to really come up with some clever ways to still let those customers come pick the berries, but a lot less of contact with them, or even cut a Christmas tree. So, you saw some farms using online reservation systems. So don't come to the farm unless you already have a reservation, a certain time slot. And maybe you had to prepay, for a basket or a cardboard flat that you can fill with as many berries as you like, but you have prepaid for it. So those are the types of systems changes that we saw in the ag sector. And I think some of those changes might stay with us after the pandemic is over.
I'm speaking with Jeff Martin, the Sustainable Food System Associate Educator for UConn Extension. I'm guessing that you folks at UConn Extension certainly didn't have in your plans for this year how to work with farmers during a pandemic. You must have had to adapt as much as your clients, as the farmers did, as this pandemic rolled through.
Sure, absolutely. We, of course, like everybody else, had to start using online, Zoom meetings a lot. If you were, I have some colleagues who are experts in vegetable production or fruit production. And so instead of visiting the farms, they maybe had to rely on farmers sending them pictures of a crop that maybe has a disease in order to identify what to do about that. We have changed how we do things. We are holding a couple of smaller group trainings. Like I mentioned, the chainsaw training, I think we had 12 people at a chainsaw training a couple weeks ago out in Nanawag at the Agriculture Science School there, and it was outdoors, everybody's masked. So we're taking lots and lots of precautions, but for the most part, we're not able to do things in person.
I'm thinking, too, in terms of the kind of advice and the kind of teaching that you would offer in the face, again, of the pandemic, which changed so much for the people who rely on the information that you can provide them, especially some of the newer farmers.
Yeah, that is true. Although, honestly, a lot of our work with farmer training happens in the winter. So we're really seeing those changes take effect now. Usually in the summer, that's not the time when we're doing farmer trainings. But what we did spend a lot of time doing was informing them of all the different federal aid opportunities there were. There was the Small Business Administration's economic assistance programs, the Payroll Protection Program. Later on, USDA had another program, which just had a deadline last week. So every time there was a financial assistance program, we quickly used our connections, our digital connections, social media, email, listserv, all that, to let them know as quickly as we could, what are the opportunities here? Can you access this assistance? And because some of that assistance came a little late for the farmers. They were left out of the initial business assistance the federal government released right away in the spring. So they sort of didn't get a chance to apply for that until later, maybe June, I would say.
You also work to find new ways to ensure that locally grown food is convenient and affordable to everyone. Has the pandemic made that work more challenging?
I don't think it's made it more challenging. I think if anything, there's just been more people are really looking for it, like I said before, because of contactless opportunities for consumers and social distancing. So what we spent some time doing is making it easier for consumers to find. We have a website called Heart CT Grown, and on that website we have a very up-to-date listing of all the farmers markets and CSA businesses and farm stands where you can actually go buy locally grown. So those have been useful tools actually for everyone, I hope.
Is food insecurity something that that you deal with or see through the Yukon Extension work? And has the pandemic affected that in Connecticut?
Yeah, absolutely. I have some colleagues. They are part of a team that focus on nutrition education. And so they have these nutrition educators in every county. And whereas they normally are working with low-income households, doing like sort of small workshops in person, like maybe for 10 weeks in a row. Instead, they pivoted and had to put all of that content into nutritional educational videos and tutorials. So, you know, they have been doing that. I've also had some colleagues who were working with the dairy sector. You may know there was sort of a glut of milk at one point in the pandemic last spring. And so they quickly maneuvered and got a couple of truckloads of milk to be delivered to communities in need down in New London. So there have been some sort of logistical things. I've also personally helped a couple of entities tap into the federal Farms to Families Food Box program, which initially was a way for Connecticut. There were two Connecticut farmers that participated in that initially, and so their product was boxed up and delivered to families in need, and that was an amazing opportunity. Unfortunately, those farmers could not participate after August, but yeah, food security has been, I'm sure you're aware, has been tremendous. I want to mention one other area I work in is farm to school, and it hasn't been easy for schools to focus on, you know, let's say buying locally grown products in the current situation, but the schools have done an amazing job, just heroic job, feeding students and families throughout the pandemic since the very beginning. And I can't say enough about how much schools and school meals have really helped, you know, basically help the food insecurity challenges that we've faced in Connecticut.
In terms of training in and education in all of the areas that you deal with through Yukon Extension, mm-hmm. is it safe to assume that there have been major changes as you plan for 2021? As we speak, the vaccine is being rolled out. But it's pretty certain that it'll be the middle of next year before any large number of people are inoculated, which means it seems like the spring is going to be another pandemic period.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the university's position right now is to keep doing what we're doing right now. So, you know, to the extent that we are, most of us are working from home and telecommuting if possible. The policy from throughout the university is to continue to do that through May. So that's how we're planning right now, is just to keep doing it. I think a lot of us are hoping by summer we can get out more and do more field work and outreach in person. But yeah, you're right. We don't see it changing anytime soon.
Ms. Martin, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
No problem, Tom. Thanks for reaching out.
Certainly. Jeff Martin is the Sustainable Food System Associate Educator for Yukon Extension. I'm Tom Kuser. You're listening to The Full Story. Today, we're talking about farmers markets and how they're faring during the pandemic. On Long Island, several markets will remain open through most of December. With me now is Ethel Terry. She's the market manager for the Long Island Growers Market. Ms. Terry, hello, welcome, and thanks for taking time today.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the the availability to speak about our markets.
And I understand not only are you the market manager for the Long Island Growers Market, you're also a large-scale farmer.
Yes, we have one of the oldest farms on Long Island, close to 400 years old.
Wow.
And farmers markets actually keep us farming, and we feel we feed America.
How late do farmers markets typically stay open on Long Island? Is this unusual to be open through the middle of December? You've mentioned in our conversation earlier that there are at least a couple still functioning.
Absolutely. It's very unusual. We did it because of the pandemic. Our customers and vendors alike wanted to stay open because of the safety factor of what we offer. People don't want to go inside, so they feel safe at a market outside.
So there was enough business to carry those markets into the very late fall and possibly early winter. Should I interpret that to mean then business for the markets this year during the typical farmers market seasons was good?
Yes, they were good. They were so good, we had to hire security guards for some of our larger markets for crowd control. So they were good. Customers felt very safe, but we had to make it safe. Because we're from New York State, we had to follow New York State Department of Agriculture and Marketing rules and also the CDC rules. And it was a huge challenge for all farmers markets and vendors alike to be able to do this.
Could you tell me a little bit about the rules that you had to enforce or follow from both the state and federal governments in order to make your markets safe this year?
Absolutely. First off, we were deemed essential by our governor, which allowed us to keep open, especially during the different phases that we had to go through. So we never had to shut down, which allowed the public to come out and be masked. We had to have wash stations set up. Every vendor had to have sanitizing equipment at their stand. And the first phase, customers had to stand 6 feet in front of us. We had to blockade all of our stands. So you couldn't touch their shopping bags. You couldn't exchange money by hand. Everybody had to wear gloves. There was no sampling in the beginning. Everybody had to stand 6 feet in front of stands. So that caused a problem throughout the whole season because the lines were extremely long at most of the busier stands because they were 6 feet apart. So some vendors, and I'm being a farmer, lost some business because people thought the lines were so long. So that did cause a problem. And then another problem we found was some folks refused to wear masks. And that turned out to be some nasty problems. Mm. That's why we had security involved.
Did the problems or the challenges that the vendors encountered, did that discourage them at all from wanting to set up as the spring and summer went on?
Absolutely not. I had a number of restaurants who couldn't open contact me and actually came in with their products, and they were happy to do it. And then the customers loved being there because even though we had a social distance, they could still chat across their neighbors and their friends. And they felt alive. It gave them something to do to get them out of the house. It was a wonderful thing to do. And then the phases started easing up little by little. All our protocols were in place. The biggest change was we could start to bring in live music. We could, again, offer samplings, but they had to be pre-packaged sample. They couldn't just do like Costco. It had to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of different challenges, but for the most part, the customers loved it, and so did the vendors.
How many farmers markets are there throughout Long Island or Suffolk County? Do you have numbers?
I don't have the numbers offhand. I run 7 markets personally,
mm-hmm.
But there's quite a bit of markets. The farmers markets, as you know, are very popular. Our organization, it's very difficult to get in because you can only sell what you actually make, bake, grow, or catch. We don't allow brokers. And we started 30 years ago. We opened the first market on Long Island 30 years ago, and it just took off from there. It's all over the country, farmers markets.
Yes, well. We've heard so much about them. It's one reason why we wanted to talk about them today. I'm wondering if you know how many or how deeply the farmers markets penetrate into the population on Long Island. Do most of the residents have access to a farmers market, do you think?
Absolutely. Yes. It's they're close by each other within probably a 10-mile radius, maybe a little bit more depending where it is. Our markets where I go, our farm is located in Orient Point. That's the eastern part of Long Island on the North Fork. Mm. And it's a big farming industry out there, and it's also a big fishing and vineyard. So we take our trucks and we go, we call it up island, and we'll travel 2 hours, sometimes 2.5 hours to go to a market. So we're bringing our fresh product to large communities that don't have the access to go to the fresh farms. So this is where I set up my markets are at very large-scale areas that just don't have it. And nowadays, we find customers feel safe eating from what the farmers market offers because they know where their food is coming from. And that's very important nowadays to know. And, of course, the freshness, it's picked just for them. And we just, you know, we have seafood in there. We have artisan breads. There's all sorts of items that is sold at the markets.
I'm wondering too, in the wake of the pandemic, have any of the farmers markets, any of your farmers markets, gone virtual at all? In other words, do they sell their produce online, possibly for pickup afterwards, or some sort of a situation like that?
You know, actually, everything was tried in the beginning, and that was one thought that came through, and it didn't work. And then initially in phase one, they tried to do drive-throughs. What we did on our website is that we listed all the vendors' names, of course, but we also listed their phone numbers so customers could call us and pre-order. So that would help them somewhat, and that worked for a while. But then they wanted to just come and just relax and stroll through. But there was one thing we couldn't do. We couldn't have them congregate. You could only have one person at a stand at one time. And for the farmers, which I am, that made it very difficult for us because you couldn't come in and touch an onion or a potato or anything loose like that. So we had to prepackage a lot of products. And because we're so big and we grow so many vegetables, we had to actually set up four lines, aisles, let's call them, every day, where each aisle had the same product and one customer at a time could be down each aisle, which was very difficult to do. We managed to do it, but it had to be safety first.
I'm speaking with Ethel Terry, the market manager for the Long Island Growers Market and a large-scale farmer as well on Eastern Long Island. I'm wondering, too, today about how you plan for tomorrow. I understand that getting a farmer's market plan in place is something that has to be done well in advance. So I would imagine for this past year you were planning back in 2019, and of course things changed radically from what we were thinking about in 2019. Is that true? And how do you plan for next year given what happened this year?
Well, actually, I've already taken care of that. I start usually in November, and I write letters to the different municipalities. We have to go before the boards, and they have to give us a contract and approval. And then when the pandemic came in, they were only giving essential businesses approval for large. They would consider us like a large gathering, and the farmers markets were the only one given that approval to because the governor considered us essential. So that was a very big thing, but we start usually in November, and then we start taking applications in January for the following year for vendors to come in. And with our vendors, we feel that they have the right of first refusal because they've built their business up. So it's a long process, and it never stops. It's always going. I get calls constantly from different municipalities to hopefully bring a farmer's market to their town, and as well as vendors calling wanting to come into markets.
When do farmers markets typically open? Late winter, early spring, later?
We'd like to start when we have strawberries. So with the farmer is the anchor of any farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd like to start with strawberries and spring vegetables. So usually the end of May is when we start to come in and bring everybody in. And this year we're going till December 23rd because of the pandemic. And right now, we just had a market today, and it was freezing. It was absolutely freezing there today. But customers came out, and they appreciated it.
How did you plan for next year then? So in November, you were filling out paperwork and applying to the various authorities about setting up for 2021. Did the situation that occurred this year come into play when it came to planning for next year? Did you have to incorporate pandemic protocol into your plans for 2021?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's better to think ahead and do it that way because we could always pull it back. So absolutely. And as far as keeping the hand washing stations and the sanitizing, and all, we'll keep that in play. Why not? It's a good thing to do. Maybe they don't have to wear masks anymore. We'll see. Hopefully that, you know, we can move away from that maybe. But yes, I have to consider that we're going to be in the same situation as we are right now.
Once the pandemic is over, or essentially we're through the worst of it and things get back to, I hesitate to use the word, but toward normal, do you think some of the changes that you've incorporated in the farmers markets due to the pandemic will stay with you? You mentioned the hand washing stations, for instance, which mentioned, are a good idea even when there is no pandemic. Are there things like that that will stick with the farmers markets, do you think, in the future beyond the pandemic?
In my markets, absolutely, and the having the hand gels. Everybody keep wiping down their stations. Absolutely. Why not? Safety has to be first. And you want your customers to come in there feeling safe.
And are you feeling positive, confident about business in the coming year, in 2021, at the farmers markets?
I absolutely do. Like I said, we opened the first one 30 years ago, and it's been very, very good for us and other vendors. Now, not all farmers markets, you know, work out. Some fail. Some fail more than they win, you know, depends on your location. But I feel it's going to be very well. People miss us when we're not there.
Ms. Terry, thanks so much for your time today and telling us about the farmers markets and also about your farming activities. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much for the chance to let people know the struggles that we had down here. And let's hope for the best for the future.
And best of luck to you in 2021.
Thank you very much.
Ethel Terry.
Safe.
Yes, you too. Ethel Terry is the market manager for the Long Island Growers Market and a large-scale farmer on Eastern Long Island. The future of the Field of Greens farmers markets in New London, Connecticut is uncertain. For the past 10 years, the nonprofit group Thames Valley Sustainable Connections ran the weekly market, but the president, Art Costa, is retiring this year, and the organization is shutting down. So he's searching for a new group to keep the market going into 2021. And Art Costa joins us on the phone. Mr. Costa, welcome to The Full Story.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure. How long has there been a farmer's market in New London?
Oh, I would say over 20 years there's been a market in New London. And so it's one of the oldest markets in southeastern Connecticut.
Mm. And is it several locations as far as the markets go, or is it one particular site?
It's actually two in New London. In 2019, we had another market in the city of Groton, and we transitioned that market last year to the city of Groton and their park and recreation. And that transition went very smoothly. But we do have two markets in New London, one at L&M Hospital, and the other one at Williams Park, which is kind of the city's green area.
Mm.
And so it's a very well-trafficked area, both by foot, bike, and automobile.
How many vendors typically will be at one of your farmers markets? Let's say in the in the middle of summer during the peak periods for farmers markets.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned peak periods because markets do have an ebb and flow. We've had as many as 20, but I would say our markets, we kind of rethought the markets as neighborhood markets. And so we like to know that each vendor does well. And so we try to minimize too many redundant products from different vendors, with the exception of farmers. We welcome all farmers, both organic, and some have done the pledge, if folks are familiar with that. But I would say we have about 15 at peak, and we've had over 20 at different times. But this year was more like 15 at each of those markets.
And could you explain the pledge, just for those who aren't familiar with that?
Well, the organic pledge is what a farmer does when they basically follow organic guidelines, and they work with the Connecticut NOFA, which is the organic organization, nonprofit organization, and different states have a NOFA organization. And NOFA comes out and they basically certify, if you will, the farm as being organic. That is, they don't use pesticides and follow whatever the USDA requires. But those farms do not apply to the USDA to get that. But we do have farmers that that go as far as to get the USDA involved.
And how many customers would you say the New London markets attract in a season?
Yeah, I would say, let me just deal with this year. We saw combined in a week between 200 and 300 attendees at the market. Over the years, we've seen as many as 400, but it has kind of leveled off a bit due both this year to the pandemic. But in general, since these are neighborhood markets, and they pretty much support the New London community.
Mm.
We have a pretty solid customer base within New London. And, yeah.
You've been managing the markets for about 10 years, I understand. Could you tell me what goes into managing a farmer's market? What kind of work do you have to do in order to make these things happen on a regular basis?
Well, we start really pretty early on to do recruiting and put together. When I say recruiting, I mean vendors, and having those folks sign up. We do promotion. Our markets have a specialty stand, which is marginal, what I call marginal products, because people don't need to buy them every week, unlike fruits and vegetables. And that includes honey, maple syrup, jams, relishes, pickles, all kinds of sauces, barbecue sauces, and what have you. So we provide that at the market to ensure its presence, that those products are there every week. But we do a lot of marketing, and we provide, as a city, or I should say within New London, our market is a Connecticut-grown. And so we work closely with the Department of Agriculture here in Connecticut. And our farmers are all except women, infant, children vouchers and senior vouchers, which help to supplement based on eligibility. And so we coordinate that. The market also accepts SNAP, EBT, We process that within the market. We also process credit and debit cards. So we make sure that our vendors don't miss out on anything. And the City of New London this year got some additional funds, and they produced a coupon which was issued out within the city, good for either market at any vendor. So we coordinated all of that, and we do a lot of work in preparation, permits, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once we're up and running, we usually have somebody, either myself or someone else, managing the market and making sure that vendors know where they're going to be in the market. We have some vendors who are guests at the market, and so they're new from time to time, and the market manager needs to be able to help guide them. And, you know, those are some of the things that we do. A lot of it's in preparation, promoting signs. We put at least one ad in the newspaper. We get on the calendars of our local paper, and that usually helps get the word out. We get posters out in different business establishments and what have you. The biggest marketing thing are the tents, quite frankly. Those are probably the thing that attracts most attention. Yes.
In an article in The Day, the local newspaper in New London, you said that the market is essential and not just a nice-to-have community market. What did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant by that is two things. One is that farmers markets in Connecticut, anyway, and perhaps elsewhere, were deemed essential during this pandemic. And being outside, in particular during those peak times, made it a great place for people to get locally produced produce and other products. And so in that sense, it's essential. It's also essential regardless, because in an urban setting, it's essential for people to have access to locally produced and, in most cases, organic types of produce at prices they can, you know, afford, which is where a lot of those different vouchers come in. But also, the vendors know that their market is a certain this. In terms of the folks who attend the market, it's really a mix, and so it's critical to have healthy food come into the city. Not to say we have a great co-op that provides this as well, but a farmer's market is really important in terms of helping to build and sustain the community. We have music. And in previous years, we had family days where we had all kinds of activities in the market a couple of times during the season. That's the essentialness of it. People come every week, rain or shine, to buy their produce. So in that sense, it's more than an event. It's something that people depend on.
It would be a shame if the markets can't open next year because of a vacuum in terms of management. Are there any potential groups that are ready to step up and keep the market going? Maybe the City of New London, as what happened in Groton, where the city took over?
Well, I would hope so. but to answer your question, we have been in talks with a couple of different organizations and who've shown interest. I would say that the biggest impact that this, when we started this year, if I can back up a bit, we were looking at a kind of straight line traditional market We followed the CDC guidelines in terms of distancing and so forth and masks. But we were looking at a progression from phase one to two to three, and that we'd, you know, we'd be past this. And that's still the hope. And when I bring this up, because what I want to do is make sure that people realize the importance of this, but that sometimes there's a little, I'll call it a stutter step, because nobody knows what the future holds. And so it's kind of like waiting to see, and that probably will start to generate, once we get beyond this, a more serious commitment beyond the discussions that we've been having.
Well, Mr. Costa, thank you so much for spending some time today to tell us about the New London Markets, the Field of Greens Farmers Markets in New London.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Art Costa is the retiring president of Thames Valley Sustainable Connections, which runs the Field of Greens Farmers Markets in New London. So what do you think? Let us know. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org. We're on Twitter at FullStoryWSHU. And that's it for our program today, produced by Fatou Sangare and senior producer Ann Lopez. I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to The Full Story. Thank you.